You're not getting older, you're getting better. How do we make that more than a cliche? This hour, we find out. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we talk with gerontology policy expert Claudia Beverly. Also, Tracy Robertson of the Heritage Area Agency on Aging will tell us why she thinks Iowa needs an elder abuse law. Then, in the second half hour, keeping fit into our golden years, we'll talk with two Iowa seniors who are enjoying fitness into their 70s. Senior Olympics gold medal winner Florence Dietz and triathlete Richard Nehring. Are you a senior? What's your secret to keeping fit? Join our discussion after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You're not getting older. You're getting better. What was that? Slogan for some kind of hair color product from a few years ago? Well, this hour, we want to answer that question for real. No slogans, no mottos, but how do we make that more than just a cliche? Later in the hour, we'll visit with a couple of Iowa seniors who are really enjoying fitness well into their 70s. We'll talk with a senior Olympics gold medal winner. Flo Dietz of West Des Moines will join us. Also, runner, triathlete Richard Nehring of Iowa Falls will be with us as well. And we want you to chip in as well. If you're a senior, tell us the secret you have found to keeping fit. What habits do you have? How did you discover it? For instance, did you have a turning point later in your adult life that turned you on to exercise? What keeps you doing it every day, every week, in your routine? We want to hear about your story, especially if it involves a turning point and about the difference that healthy, fit lifestyle has made in your life. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. That number, 1-866-780-9100. Joining me, first of all, Claudia Beverly joins us by phone. She's a nurse, a professor also at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. She holds a PhD and is a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing, director of the Hartford Center of Geriatric Nursing Excellence at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences College of Nursing. That is a mouthful. Claudia Beverly, Professor Beverly, welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You will be visiting Iowa in a short time, September 10th, Tuesday, September 10th. You are a visitor to the University of Iowa as a Ida Cordelia Beam Visiting Professor, and that will be held on September 10th at the Coralville Public Library. I think there are a number of events also Wednesday, September 11th, but check out the University of Iowa website for those events. What topics, concerns will you be touching on in your talks here in Iowa?
One of the most important ones I think that I will be focusing on is leadership in geriatric nursing and in the broader healthcare delivery system. Our country is facing a lot of challenges, particularly related to older adults with the new Affordable Care Act and changes that will probably come about with Medicare and Medicaid across the country in each of our states. It's important that nurses have the leadership knowledge and skills so that they will be a part of the discussion and a part of being able to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Describe the leadership as you see it right now. You say we need more leadership in geriatric nursing. What's lacking right now that you would like to see developed?
I think we need to have many more nurses who are prepared to speak to economics of healthcare, to speak to leading and participating on interdisciplinary teams, and leaders who are much more, I'm not going to necessarily say assertive, but much more knowledgeable about the healthcare system and models of care that need to be in place that aren't now. But most important, we need many more geriatric nurses to be a part of the overall discussion and solution.
Okay, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. Many call it Obamacare. What should seniors be thinking about or doing as the new health care law becomes implemented later this year and next?
It's very interesting to me about what the second half of your show is going to be about, and that's individuals who engage in fitness and what keeps them going. One of the most important problems, if you will, or the number one problem facing older adults is management of chronic illness. And many of these illnesses can either be prevented or at least some of the problems resulting from it can be managed through a more self-care mode, and that is individuals taking responsibility for their own actions, and yet they need to know how to do that. And while it's important that healthcare professionals are able to help them through education, we just need to do a better job about helping them engage in their own activity, mm-hmm. in their own level of exercise, nutrition, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. The people we'll be talking about in our second half hour do have that active senior mindset, but for someone who doesn't have it and has a turning point there in life, what do you find as a real spur? How do you appeal to especially an older population to stay active?
I think that we need to spend much more time talking about quality of life and how one chooses to live life and to achieve that quality. I think we're beginning to really look at, as a country, it's not quantity of life as much as it is quality. You could have quantity and have very poor quality for a long time, but people want to be as active as they can be and as healthy as they can be during the life that they or each of us lives, and how important that is for each of us to identify that and then try to achieve that quality of life.
Mm-hmm. It seems not a month goes by when we have a new study, new research showing the connection between staying active into our golden years and the mental acuity that we can maintain. Talk about that a little bit, because that can be a real, if you know, which we do, that what is it? The best thing you can do to stay mentally fit is physically fit, right?
That is correct. And what we also know, that the number one factor affecting our life, our quality of life, is engagement. And that means engagement either for pay or for volunteer, as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. There was a study that just recently came out that showed individuals who stayed in the workforce had less dementia problems than those who did not. And I think there, again, really focuses on engagement. So I don't think that you really have to work, you know, for until you're so many years old. But I think it's important that if you don't work, that you replace that with something else, and to be engaged in volunteer work, mm-hmm. Or meaningful work that is helping society.
Yeah, it sounds like you're talking about you just need to have a purpose. You need to be driven by a purpose or multiple purposes every day you get up.
That's right. And, I mean, that keeps your mind going. That keeps your body up and going and moving. It being with other people stimulates all of us, you know, relationship building, but keeping that mind active. And I think that's one of the most key activities that individuals could do.
Claudia Beverly joins us here for a few minutes by phone. She's the director of the Hartford Center of Geriatric Nursing Excellence at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences College of Nursing. Now, Professor Beverly, you're involved with an innovative Arkansas aging initiative program that is attracting some attention nationwide. It involves Centers on Aging throughout the state of Arkansas, a collaboration between your university and local community hospitals. Tell us about it and what makes it new or different than what we may have here in Iowa.
Well, first of all, until recently, the Arkansas Aging Initiative was the only program of its type as a statewide program. It's currently being replicated in Oklahoma by funding through the Donald W. Reynolds Foundation, but it's been essentially what the Arkansas Aging Initiative is. It is a group of nine regional centers on aging geographically located around the state. It has two components. One is education, and we target education to healthcare professionals as well as older adults and their families and the community at large. And then the clinical component, we have an interdisciplinary team of geriatric specialists, a geriatrician, geriatric advanced practice nurse, and social worker. Sometimes we have a pharmacist, a neuropsychologist. And this team practices in a clinic that's owned and operated by a partner hospital. And we have, at this point, eight partner hospitals operating these clinics. And the team provides primary care and consultative services to other healthcare professionals. But the team also provides chronic disease self-management and care coordination. So individuals in Arkansas, 98% are now within 60 miles of interdisciplinary geriatric specialty care. And this is not being done in Iowa or other states. The clinic prototype is located in several hospitals across the country, and I would say at this point, to our knowledge, no more than about 10 or 12 hospitals. So you can see that there is a huge need for this to be developed elsewhere.
Why do you need these separate centers for geriatric care? Why not just have people, as they grow older, stay with their same primary care? What is we know as we get older, we generally need more health care, the quantity, but what is qualitatively different, the type of care that has to be delivered as we age?
One of the most primary differences in the usual care is that this type clinic for all new patients allows an hour for a visit and then 30 minutes for return. Most primary care offices cannot afford more than about 12 to 15 minutes in the amount of time for older adults, and that simply is not enough time. The clinic also is not there in competition, and we do consult with other healthcare professionals. But in today's time, there are a lot of physicians in private practice that are not taking Medicare patients or have limited their practice to Medicare patients because of the pay that they receive compared to other types of insurance.
So how does this new model fit in with skyrocketing health costs and efforts to keep those costs down?
We've been able to demonstrate a cost savings in several ways. One, our geriatricians in the hospital or when their patients are in the hospital, across the board, have lower length of stay than any other primary care physician. They also experience less cost than to care for the individual than other primary care professionals. We also have found that where our clinics are located, that we have anywhere from one to four avoidable hospitalizations based on the Agency for Health Research and Quality methodology. So we were very excited about that and anxious to do more discussion or more study. And the reimbursement allows for the interdisciplinary team to be in place. We know that advanced practice nurses and geriatricians can bill a pro fee. None of the other disciplines can, so we have a facility fee that covers their work, and that is not found in private practices. So So we are not there to take patients away, and we have not done that, but we are there to help support other providers and to care for people who do not have primary care access.
Claudia Beverly, Director of the Hartford Center of Geriatric Nursing Excellence at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences College of Nursing. Please hang on, Professor Beverly. I want to add to our conversation Tracy Robertson here in Iowa, Regional Protective Services Coordinator at the Heritage Area Agency on Aging. That is a department of Kirkwood Community College, and the Heritage Agency helps planning, coordinating, funding programs that serve older adults in seven counties in eastern Iowa. Tracy Robertson, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tracy, we wanted to shift to another aspect of health care, of aging, that we're quite concerned with, and I know you are too. You manage the Elder Abuse Intervention Program in Lynn, Johnson, Cedar, and Jones counties. Now, you're going to be meeting in 2 weeks at the Coralville Library.
Yes.
Part of your meeting, you're going to talk about elder abuse. You'll be a member of a panel. Remind us, what are some of the types of elder abuse commonly occurring in Iowa?
What we see primarily in the areas that we serve here at Heritage is neglect by a caregiver, a lot of self-neglect, folks who, you know, don't have family members or friends to help them, and quite often are cognitively impaired, and especially financial exploitation. But of course, you know, there are some cases of physical and sexual abuse as well, definitely verbal and psychological abuse.
Where is this likely to happen, more in private homes or care facilities?
We investigate in the community, in private homes. The Department of Inspections and Appeals, they do inspect the facilities where abuse might be occurring, but I would say, you know, it's definitely a problem, you know, in the community as well as in facilities.
Mm-hmm. How good are we at discovering, investigating, and preventing elder abuse?
Really, it's creating awareness that elder abuse is a problem. You know, some people don't believe elder abuse is happening right here in Iowa, and you know,
what do you say to people who don't believe it, who need convincing? What are the most stark things you can say?
Well, you know, last year we had 481 referrals to our elder abuse intervention program. You know, that's a significant amount when you're just talking about four counties here in Iowa. What we really need, and you had mentioned previously, is, you know, we need an elder abuse law in Iowa. Iowa's only one of a few states that does not have a comprehensive law that specifically addresses the unique needs of all older Iowans who are victims of abuse, neglect, and exploitation. What we have currently is a dependent adult abuse law, which has very specific criteria in order for a report to be accepted by the Department of Human Services. They do the inspections for dependent adult abuse. And those criteria are the person has to be either mentally or physically impaired enough to where they are unable to meet their imminent needs in daily life. There must be a caregiver, either a paid or unpaid caregiver, that they rely upon, again, for their imminent needs. And then it has to meet the definition of abuse according to Iowa code, which only recognizes five types of abuse.
And so what types of things are slipping through the cracks when we do not have an elder abuse law like some other states?
That's where the Elder Abuse Intervention Program can help those who are falling through the cracks, because we can help anyone over the age of 60. They can be independent or dependent, and we accept abuse cases that follows the National Center on Aging's definitions, which includes all the types I mentioned, including verbal and psychological abuse and abandonment, which Iowa code does not. but we have a significant amount of cases that we help where, you know, they just don't meet the criteria. They either don't meet the mental or physical incapacity. They may not have a formal caregiver, but we can definitely, you know, help those folks.
Right.
We do have some access to funding.
Well, before we have to go here in a couple of minutes, Tracy Robertson, what do you find is when you investigate these hundreds of elder abuse, alleged elder abuse cases, what do you find is behind it? Are the people who are doing the abuse, do they necessarily think they're abusing, or can they do that without being aware of it?
We find that most of the time, unfortunately, it's family members, friends, who are definitely taking advantage of them.
Okay, so they're conscious of it.
Yeah, especially with the financial exploitation,
right,
which, you know, is really on the rise, and especially with, you know, baby boomers, you know, entering that age of greatest risk as well. But, you know, sometimes strangers will, you know, kind of ingratiate themselves, you know, in their lives and try to form a relationship with them.
Yep.
With ulterior motives. But
yeah, we've heard about these scams. That's
definitely scams and fraud. But it's just a problem that's not going to go away. And, you know, we need to catch these people who are falling through the cracks.
Okay, Tracy Robertson, thank you. Regional Protective Services Coordinator at the Heritage Area Agency on Aging. Claudia Beverly, you're still there?
I'm here.
Very quickly, before we have to go, this was in the news. You know, many of the negative stereotypes about older adults, the most common is forgetful, senile, prone to call something like, you know, senior moments. Well, we have a new study. I don't know if you've seen it from University of California Davis School of Gerontology, showing that simply reminding older adults about ageist ideas about senior moments exacerbates their memory problems. Does that surprise you?
No, not really. I think that you bring awareness to something and people then are going to pay more attention and sometimes will act in that way.
They worry about it more. It becomes a focus, yeah, and bigger concern. And then whenever there is a forgetful moment, it becomes a focus, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Okay. Claudia Beverly, we look forward to welcoming you to Iowa, to the University of Iowa, as part of the Ida Cornelia Beam Visiting Professorships Program. Be speaking in Iowa Tuesday, September 10th, also Wednesday, September 11th. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I am so excited about coming to Iowa, so I look forward to meeting everyone.
Professor Beverly, thank you very much. Coming up in just a moment, as we continue talking about growing old, staying healthy, we're going to meet a couple of remarkable individuals. Florence Dietz, Flo Dietz, lives in West Des Moines, and she is an senior Olympic gold medal winner. She's won several medals in this past Senior Olympics. We'll hear about that. Also, Richard Nehring. He lives in Iowa Falls. He'll be joining us. He's running the New York City Marathon, Ragbri, for a quarter of a century. Also an Ironman competition in Hawaii, but I don't think it was always that way, being fit for Richard. We'll find out about his story when we come back. We want to hear about your secret to keeping fit as a senior, the difference it's made in your life. 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a few minutes with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about growing old, staying healthy this hour. We'd like to hear from you this half hour. What is the secret to keeping fit as a senior? Perhaps there was a turning point later in your adult life that turned you on to exercise, and we would like to hear about that and hear about the difference that has made in your life, fitness and growing old. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Tomorrow on this program, Dennis Goldford will be with us, usually our politics guy. Tomorrow he's going to be talking about the secret recordings of Richard Nixon. Perhaps you heard about the latest batch, some 340 hours of recordings being released. we'll find out, get some analysis, find out some things that we're learning from this new batch of tapes that we didn't know about the Nixon presidency tomorrow on this program. Joining us in our Des Moines studio, Florence Dietz of West Des Moines is with us. I understand, Florence, you go by Flo. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You graduated from Iowa State University.
Yes, I did.
And you've lived outside of Iowa sometimes in your life, including Arkansas.
That's correct.
But we have reason to congratulate you. You've just won several medals at the Senior Olympics National Competition in Cleveland. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
What did you win? This is swimming competitions, right?
Right. I entered the swimming competitions. There's all kinds of competitions there. You can have your choice of everything. I do my best in the long distances and swim backstroke and breaststroke the best and do okay with front crawl in races.
This was a national competition. Were you surprised to come out in the cases on top, or you know, with the bronze close to on
bronze
top?
Bronze and gold. Well, no, not really. I'm a pretty good
you
swimmer.
You blew
and I
the
work
competition
at it.
Away. You did you?
Well, I have stamina, so that's why I do well in the long distances.
Right.
Because I have a good stamina, and I might start out a little behind at the beginning and just keep moving. Mm-hmm. So, and I enjoy doing it and. Because I teach swimming, I know how to do it right and check out how to do it better.
Okay, so you're teaching, I understand, in Waukee, is that right?
I teach at the Waukee YMCA and also at the Urbandale Municipal Pool. So I get lots of opportunities to have a really good time, and they pay me to have a really good time. and I enjoy it, and I get my exercise in because I swim often the long lengths with the kids who swim better and have to do lengths, but I do a lot of water walking back and forth with the kids.
Right.
And so it's good exercise.
Since we're talking about growing old, staying healthy, fitness, Flo, may I ask how old you are?
I am 77.
77 years old. When did you pick up swimming as a passion?
Well, we were in New York. And I like swimming and stuff. But then we moved to Arkansas to a retirement village, and I met some people who swam in master's swimming. So I was past 50 when I first entered a swimming contest. And we would go to a few around Arkansas. And at this point, I have a couple of Arkansas records and national master's records and senior Olympics. Records. I really think I just got better as I got older.
I am a swimmer too, so I'm with you there as far as having a passion for swimming, Flo. But for those who don't swim, tell us what you find in swimming that perhaps, and I know you do some other things, what you find in swimming so appealing.
Well, you get a lot of chance to think. And so I count my laps, but I also think about how I might do something differently with my students and how I might make things work better for them. It's really a great sport because you don't hurt yourself. Many people do take up swimming after having hurt themselves running or doing something that was a little tough on their joints and muscles. But swimming is so good for you, and you can try all different kinds of swimming. You can always get better, and that's always a nice thing. And you really meet a lot of nice people, too. Mm-hmm. If you're doing water walking, you get to walk and talk, and it doesn't seem like exercise at all.
Now, some may say, oh, back and forth, following the black line in the pool. Oh, Flo, that's boring. You don't find it boring.
I don't find it boring.
Why not?
Well, because I think about things, plan what I'm going to do. Sometimes I've thought it would be really nice to have a notebook at the end that was waterproof so I could write down all the things now I want to do when I get done swimming and go do them. But I don't always remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it sounds like it may be for you almost a little bit like a meditation.
Oh, you might say that. Sure, you're. I'm not going, but I'm thinking about.
Yeah, right.
But I'm thinking about the stuff that's important to me or important to my friends or who I'm going to be doing something with.
Now, at the at the Waukee YMCA, are you teaching seniors or all ages?
I'm pretty much with the kids. I can teach seniors. I've done that in Urbandale. I can teach anybody.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Really.
Flo Dietz in our Des Moines studio would like to hear from you if you have, as one of our listeners, tell us about the secret to keeping fit as a senior from your perspective. Or perhaps you had a turning point where you turned from fairly inactive to active. We want to hear about what that point was all about. 1-866-780-9100 is our telephone number, toll free. Flo also joining us. Richard Nehring is with us in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Richard.
Hi. It's good to be with you.
Since we're all sharing, well, you two are sharing ages. How old are you, Richard?
I'm 73.
73. And you live in Iowa Falls?
Well, I live in Alden.
You live in Alden?
Just right next to Iowa Falls.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm looking at my notes. You've run in a New York City marathon recently, fairly recently?
Well, I've done quite a few marathons. I've done Boston twice and New York City, but New York City was where I started thinking about triathlon when I saw Ironman on TV.
You've done an Ironman competition in Hawaii. This is a big deal. For those who don't know, what is involved in an Ironman?
Well, it's a 2.2-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and a marathon.
And when was your last one of those?
Well, that was 1995.
Okay.
And tried to get back since, but at my age, you have to finish first in your age group or you don't get a spot. Florence, I want to congratulate you, and I need you to teach me how to swim better.
You know, I have found that there have been a lot of triathlon people that considering how many I know, that I have helped.
Good.
Because swimming is their weakest spot.
That's right.
So often.
Yeah. Right. Isn't it true that as a triathlete, the normal average triathlete dreads the swim, right?
Oh, yeah. I did the New York City Marathon. I came home and decided to learn how to swim, and I couldn't even swim a lap.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I was winded.
That happens.
And Richard, at your age, are you finding that actually swimming might be better, healthy for your joints?
Oh, it's great. Just great. I can have a little injury, and I can get in the pool, and I swim every night, and I can come out of it a lot faster.
You have to mention, Richard, you've done Ragbri for 25 years?
Yeah, 25 years.
Uh-huh. So I understand, though, Richard, when we talk about turning points, earlier in your life, perhaps in the 1980s, when you were in your 40s, you were not as athletic, were you?
I was an alcoholic, and I smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. I was a chain smoker. I quit smoking and drinking in 1980, and then I gained a lot of weight. I went up to 240 pounds. And 1986, I started going out at night and walking a little and running a little and just kept moving up, moving a little further each day. And the pounds started coming off, so I just kept on 5Ks, 10Ks, and half marathons, and then finally marathons.
What was the key to changing your mindset to...
I just didn't like the way I looked, and I had a pretty good-sized belly, and I wanted to take it off. And when it started coming off, that was incentive to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I bet you, looking back at old pictures from those days, you look like a different person.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I got down to 165 pounds.
Was it important, and I want to ask you too, Flo, about this too, because about a support group. You need to find, don't you, a group of like-minded people in your community so you're not out there just alone running or swimming or whatever you're doing, biking, Richard.
Well, I'm kind of a loner. Train alone, but I do have a support group now. I have some ladies there at the fitness center where I work part-time, and I love to see the change in people. I've worked there for about 6 years, and I've seen a lot of ladies come through there, and men, who have started working out, and they say I'm an inspiration to them. I hope I am. And they're looking good.
So you see the change coming on the people. What is the change?
Well, they lose weight, and they mentally they just get so much sharper and so much happier. You can see it.
Right. What do you say to someone who might be having a bad day or maybe starting out on and hasn't really reaped the benefits of staying fit yet? What is your pitch?
If I can do it, you can do it. and I tell them what mm-hmm. happened to me.
Mm-hmm. So, Flo, what about you, your support network?
Well, you know, when Richard says he's a loner, very often swimmers and runners, bicycle riders are loners. We're not playing basketball. That's a team sport. We're not playing football. So when you do look for a group, it's not probably going to be real large, but you will find them if you get a chance. I find that one thing I like about teaching so much is all the young people who teach. I like the lifeguards that I work with. I like the other teachers that just they're fun. Of course, the little kids I'm teaching are lots of fun too. Mm-hmm. So they're a support group in their way.
Yes.
Yep.
You are both in your 70s. When you think about previous generations, your parents' generation, your grandparents' generation, this is really kind of a new thing to be fit into your 70s, 80s, and beyond, isn't it, Flo?
Well, I think, you know, probably lots of them were fit, but they didn't work at it so hard. I mean, they had the work, and when they stopped physically working, they didn't go to gyms and stuff.
Right.
They would thought that would have been foolish to them.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, talk about, Richard, you said you can see people light up once they've had some exercise. What did you notice in yourself when you made this turnaround in your life about the mental benefits of staying fit?
Well, I just felt good about myself, and I'm a competitor. That keeps me going. I think about my competitors out there that are in my age group, and I think, well, they're out there. I better get out there too, because I know they're training, so I need to train also. But being a loner, I have to tell you, I hiked the Appalachian Trail, and that helps if you are a loner.
2,000 and some miles.
Yeah,
that takes it all?
Several months, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
And also, I've done the John Muir out west, and I got to tell you, I'm so proud to be able to do this. I'm going to Africa September 21st and climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
You are? Great. Who's going on? Anybody going along?
My grandson. I got him hooked on hiking.
How old is he?
He's 28.
So you and your grandson to Tanzania to climb Mount Kilimanjaro? Yeah.
We went last year and did Mount Whitney out in California, so he's hooked.
Oh. Good.
Well, what a great bit of time together. Let's go to Oscar in Iowa City. Oscar dialed to tell us about fitness growing older, 1-866-780-9100. Oscar, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. You asked for comments about events that changed your life.
Yep. How old are you now, Oscar?
I'll be 86 in November.
Okay, and you're a fitness enthusiast. What changed your life?
Well, in 1973, we had the first Arab oil crisis. You couldn't buy 5 gallons of gas on a Sunday morning for love nor money. A younger partner of mine said, "Why don't we ride to work on our bikes?" I said, "Well, I'm too old." He says, "No, you're not."
And you were in your 40s.
Exactly,
45. Nice.
So I started commuting to work. That was one event. And then a year or two later, I subscribed to Bicycling Magazine and read the diary of a man, 70 years old, who had just finished riding from California to Quebec City, 3,400 miles in 34 days. I was astounded that a man of 70 could do that kind of exercise, and it enthused me to try it myself, and I began doing that. Rode back to my hometown in Kentucky, which was 450 miles, did that in 4 days, and little by little I covered the United States and then parts of Europe and so forth. Those are the two events that happened that got me into bicycling, and I still do it. Rode this morning.
Right. Oscar, if you had not had that discovery, those series of discoveries beginning in your 40s, would you have made it to where you are today?
I don't know. I don't know whether the chicken or the egg came first. I can't say.
We were talking about the mental benefits of this. What do you see there when you get a good, vigorous workout on your bike?
Yeah, there's a euphoria. I feel that. I enjoy that. After a hard day of work, I've retired now, but a hard day of work, it was always striking to me that a 10-mile ride would make me feel better and brighter rather than the opposite.
Right. Isn't that the real puzzle here? Because you can, you know, feel tired from your work or your desk work or whatever kind of work you have, and then you go out and you do something really physically demanding, and you would think, now I'm really going to be blown out. But, Oscar, you're not that way, are you?
That's right. Those endorphins really kick in. Something to it.
I got to tell you, Oscar, I rode my bicycle across the United States 5 years ago and followed the Lewis and Clark Trail from Astoria, Oregon to Iowa, and then went on to Yorktown, Virginia. But I went through Kentucky, and there's a lot of dogs come out on and get off the little bicycles. Is that right?
That's right.
That's where your adrenaline glands better be working,
yeah.
Right?
Well, that'll do it. Yes,
they said
indeed.
As soon as I got to cross the line into Virginia, they would quit chasing you, and they were right.
So Richard, I want to talk to you, Oscar. Please stay on the line, Richard. In your hiking or in your biking, do you have a favorite story you like to tell of an encounter or something along the line there?
Well, I encountered so many good people. The hiking and the biking, you encounter people who will take you in and trust you. I had one, I was at a convenience store going to camp behind his store, and he said, you don't have to do that. He said, come with me. And he said, I got an apartment above my garage. And he took me in, just a total stranger took me in and fed me. And yeah.
Do you have a story, Oscar, that you look back on fondly?
My first trip abroad was back in 77, and bikes were not as good in those days. I broke three spokes and limped into the town of Perth in Scotland and found the bike shop, and the manager wouldn't even look at me. I was wearing a Bell helmet. He thought I was a motorcyclist. He wouldn't even look at me. His wife came up and said, could I help you, sir? And I said, my bicycle's broke down. I need repairs. And the old man raised his head. Oh, bicyclist. I thought you were a motorcyclist. He shouted for his son. John, come here and help this man. And they couldn't do enough for me. He was the best mechanics I've ever seen. They had that bike taken apart. They relieved the bent frame that the TWA airline had done on it. And then when I got done, they said, now you want to go up here to the widow so-and-so's house to spend the night. It's too late for you to ride any further. They took great care of me.
Oh, what a great
That's
story.
Good.
Thank you, Oscar, for calling from Iowa City. We
thank
appreciate it.
Thank you for taking me.
All right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. What's out there in the future for you, Richard? And then we'll go to Flo. What do you still want to do? Okay, you said Kilimanjaro. That's on your docket there. Flo, what about you? What's next?
Well, in 2 years, will be the Senior Olympics again. It'll be in Minneapolis, so it'll be close and handy. And my goal is lose a little weight because it's kind of, with swimming, you know, you have a little weight, it helps you stay, fat flows better. But you also want to be streamlined, so you don't want to be too fat. I need to learn how to do a better entry so I get a start from the beginning, be the leader, and not have to catch up. And I think I'll just keep having a good time and do what I do.
Mm-hmm. We can expect you as a defending champion then next year in the Senior Olympics.
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah,
Is it 2 years?
Yeah, because the Iowa Games will be in June, and then you qualify to go to the Nationals a year later. So, and I'll just keep having fun with the kids when I'm out at the Living History Farms. Takes a lot of walking out there and teaching kids how to walk on stilts. Build up your muscles doing
that. Do you walk on stilts, Flo?
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
How tall are these stilts?
Well, it depends where they put them. A foot or two off the ground, I guess, wherever they put the foot stand.
Yeah, right.
So sometimes you got to demonstrate to show the kids you can do it.
So give a little encouragement, Flo, to someone who may be listening who perhaps is ready, is ripe to change to a more fitness-oriented lifestyle. What do you say, Flo?
Well, I often say to people a water exercise class is a great way to start. We have a lot of adults that did not learn to swim. They didn't have the opportunity, and they're a bit fearful. So if they join a water exercise class, they'll get used to the water. They'll get good exercise that doesn't hurt, and they'll meet a lot of nice people.
Yeah. So start out. So don't think you have to leave, your feet have to leave the bottom. You can walk, start
Correct.
Off with like that.
Yep.
Take it at a gradual pace and do what comes natural and need not have any fear.
Sure.
Flo Dietz, I want to thank you for joining us in our Des Moines studio.
It's been a pleasure.
And Richard Nehring, thank you for coming to our Cedar Falls studio. And we continued wish you continued health and fitness many years to come, both of you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese in Cedar Falls. Help from Tony Daner and in Des Moines. Help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk show is Catherine Perkins. Charity Nebbe has just stepped into our, a spry step into our studio. You're a fitness buff, I know, too, Charity. What do you got coming on tomorrow's program at 10?
We are going to have so much fun tomorrow. We're going to write a literacy autobiography. We're going to talk about the books that shaped us. So if you can reach back and remember the very first book that you read on your own,
ooh,
or the books that when you were a young reader really stayed with you
and what would it be for
formed
you?
Your opinions about the world.
Can you name one?
The first chapter book I ever read on my own was called The Hundred Dresses. Mm. And I felt I read it all in one day. Felt such a sense of accomplishment.
The first book that really shaped me was a little bit later, Papillon. It was a thick book, and I got lost in it every day at school, after school.
I think a lot of us have stories like that, so we're going to have a lot of fun tomorrow.
Thank you, Charity. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock, tune in for that Talk of Iowa with Charity Nebbe. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.